Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
C.S. Lewis said that we are too easily satisfied, like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at sea. We are far too easily pleased. At Lift Up Your Hearts, the Searcy Institute's Georgia Regional Conference, contemplate with us how to elevate the desires of your children beyond what easily pleases, to hopes that don't disappoint, and to joys that don't leave a bitter taste. We will be in Atlanta, Georgia, October 20th and 21st. Registration includes lunch on both days and free audio recordings of all the conference sessions. Our speakers are worth the travel. Kristen Rudd, John Hodges, Heidi White, who leads an atrium course, Tim McIntosh of the podcast That Plays the Thing, Paideia Prize winner Greg Wilbur, who founded New College Franklin, and Thomas Fickley, the headmaster of St. Dunstan's Academy. Go to www.searcyinstitute.com/events to register and for more information.
And welcome to Dwell, a Searcy Institute podcast for homeschooling moms by homeschooling moms. I'm your co-host, Renee Mathis, and I am here with my other co-host, Karen Kern. Hello, Karen.
Hi, Renee. Nice to be here.
Good to be back. And we hope everyone's getting off to a great start in their school year. And so today we have a special guest with us, and she is a member of my Searcy Apprenticeship Program. And that's how I first came to know Marsha. Her name is Marsha Black, and she is a native Texan. And she's going to talk to us today about history, specifically family history, telling family stories, and how we can help our children have a love for those things as well. So I'm going to let Marsha talk to you and tell you a little bit about herself. So Marsha, welcome. We're glad to have you.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. I am married to Martin Black. We've been married for 20 years. We have two daughters, Emery, who just started college at St. Constantine College, and then our daughter Parker, who's 15. And Parker attends part-time the private school that I work at, Faith Academy of Freestone, and then I also homeschool Parker.
Super, super. So tell us, what is your connection specifically to Texas history and how you got started learning about that?
Okay. For me, it began when I was a young girl. I happened to live on the property that part of my family had settled in 1853. And so I have memories of playing in the yard and my younger sister and I finding things that were left by the people who had lived there before. One time we found a fork and we thought it was the coolest thing. And then we found a chipped dish, and sometimes we would find old tools. And what was neat about it is that we lived there and my grandfather lived near. And so we could ask he or my dad and they would say, oh, well, that, you know, is this, and it belonged to Grandma Georgie. And so that put us back, you know, our curiosity and our imagination went back two and three generations before. And so that sparked it, just being in that place, having that experience. And then we began to farm the land and planted peach trees. And so living on the land, farming it like it had been farmed all those years ago, gave us experiences. And so we...
Can I jump in? Did you live in a house that had been built by a previous generation as well? Or did you build a new house on the old family land?
So by the time we were there, it had been several years before someone had lived there. And my grandparents had built a small house. So it was not as old as, you know, what had originally been there. But so just the history of being on the land and the stories. And that's something else on my dad's other side of the family. My great-grandfather was a raconteur. He called himself that. We knew he was that. It is actually on his epitaph, on his gravestone. And so he told stories, and it drew us into things of the past and things that we could hear him talk about. And so it built a relationship. And he, even though he didn't live on the land where we were, his family had settled around Lake Travis, Marshall's Ford Dam, which is how I got my name, Marsha. It, you know, carried down generations. My dad is Marshall. And so it's just the fact that when we got together as a family, stories were told. We had experience from living on the land, but then also people told stories. And then that ended up happening on both sides of my family.
Yeah, that's a great way to pass those things down. It's just, I can imagine it's fun, right? It's fun to listen to the older relatives talk about what life was like. And just imagine, we'll be doing that with our grandkids, telling them about the years when we didn't have cell phones and the internet.
And it'll sound so foreign to them.
But those stories, that's a great connection. So you and Martin live on the property that has been in your family. And so I know one interesting story that you were just telling Karen and I is your connection with Fort Parker. And every Texas school child who takes Texas history knows the story of Cynthia Ann Parker. I'm going to let you recap that for us. And then, of course, her son grew up to be a famous chief, Quanah Parker, who did a lot for his particular tribe people. So anyway, tell us about the Parkers and how y'all connect to them.
Sure. Okay. And so, and just to get back, but Martin and I don't live on the family land at this point, but we live near it. So my parents are on some family land that Martin and I will work to farm and rebuild, regenerative farming. We like to practice that. But Fort Parker, yes, when Martin and I married, I learned about his connection to Fort Parker, and his mother was named after Cynthia Ann Parker because Cynthia Ann and my mother-in-law shared a great, great, great grandfather, of course, for my mother-in-law, Elder John Parker. And he was the one of the Parkers to come to Texas and help settle and establish Fort Parker, he and his sons. And they actually got permission to come to Texas, or of course it was Mexico at the time, to establish a Protestant church. And it would have been the first Protestant church in Texas, because at that time, Santa Ana was requiring people to become Catholic to come to Texas. So the fact that they were able to come in and begin this Protestant church was amazing to begin with. So they came, and that was, it was neat to know that Martin was descended from that, and that he and Quanah Parker are cousins. And then we named our daughter Parker. Well, once my mom retired from work, she became interested in family history and began researching part of her family that we really didn't know anything about because of the divorce and alcoholism and things like that. And so she began researching that and going to courthouses, looking at records or census records at our courthouses. You can get this information from old libraries will have records. And she discovers that we have ancestors that came to Texas with the Parker family. And so it connected Martin and I. And I joke, our families came to Texas together, but Martin and I are not cousins. So
we will clear that up. Okay.
So I don't know where Fort Parker is, not being from Texas. Is this Southern Texas then?
No, this is going to be Central East Texas.
Central East Texas, got
near it. Mejia, Texas, probably about 40 miles east of Waco is where Fort Parker is still today, and you can visit it. And so that has given us a neat connection, because then it was something, you know, we knew that Martin was connected to it and the girls, and so it was already interesting. And then to add to the fact that my family, the Bates, came with the Parkers, it just, it really brought it to life for both sides of the family. And then the stories to tell and the things we learned through
that. So what is the story about Cynthia Ann, that she was kidnapped or whatever?
Yes. So at the end of the Texas Revolution, which would have been April 20th, I believe, 1836, Texas was still a bit unsettled. The Comanche had laid off as far as attacking. And so Santa Anna and his men were going back to Mexico, and people were just getting somewhat reestablished again. And so the Parkers had been away from the fort. Some at this point had come back, because now this was May of 1836. And as they were out working in their fields, there was a Comanche raid. And I do think there were other tribes mixed in with that, and I'm not exactly sure which. And they came in and attacked, basically, the fort, kidnapping Cynthia Ann and then a young mother, Rachel Plummer. Cynthia Ann's younger brother was taken also. And and then people were murdered. Martin's grandfather, Elder John Parker, and his wife at that time were murdered. It was tragic. And so once the kids were taken, there was a long search and that kind of thing. And it took a while for people to feel safe again in Texas after that. It was devastating. And things like that were happening throughout Texas. I mean, the Native Americans were upset. People were coming in onto their property. And so it was, there's a book, Summer of the Empire Moon,
Empire
of the Summer Moon. And I think it does the best job of telling both sides of the story.
So was Cynthia rescued?
So to use the word rescue, I think people would debate it. She lived with the Comanche into her 30s, I believe. And so Sol Ross took a group of men, and they ended up in this Comanche village where Cynthia Ann was as an adult. And by this time she had children, and they realized that she was a white girl and that she had probably been a captive. And so the rangers with Sullivan, why can't I think of his name? Lawrence Sullivan Ross. Sol Ross. Rescued her. And then there are stories. She really wasn't happy once she was taken back with the white people, because she had become so adapted to the Comanche way of life, and she had children. And then if you read accounts of the Parkers telling the story, she wanted to be back with the Parkers. So it's interesting the more you dig into it and the different things you read.
A really interesting novel.
Yeah, it didn't have a happy ending, because she and her daughter both died while they were staying at a fort, a U.S. fort in Texas. She never got to go back to what she considered her people by that point. And her little daughter died with her. But her son, Quanah, grew up to be a Comanche chief, ended up settling in Oklahoma with a lot of the Comanche people when they were put onto a reservation. And he became somewhat of a celebrity and met with the president and hosted dinners with Teddy Roosevelt in his house, and really spoke up and spoke up on behalf of his people to try to help them adapt and, kind of move forward. So it is a fascinating story. But story and histories are fascinating. And I know that you have done some things, Marcia, to kind of help on a community level with preserving history. And there are a couple of organizations that you're a part of. You want to tell us?
Sure. So with my mom doing research, this opened the door for us to join Daughters of the American Revolution. So mom went back far enough in her family history to discover that we're descended from Puritans who refused to submit to the Church of England. And so they were persecuted and put in prison. And then that led us to then, or us, I used to like you're a part of it, my ancestors to then immigrate to the U.S. Of course, at the time, it wasn't, but yes. And then so through that, I have ancestors that fought in the American Revolution, which then makes you eligible to be a member of Daughters of the American Revolution. And so on that level, we do what we can to perpetuate and continue telling history. We give scholarships. We volunteer for veterans now that we can help. We want to help contribute to memorials and statues and things just so that history can be told and seen. And then we're also members of Daughters of the Republic of Texas because we can prove lineage to people who lived in Texas while it was a republic. And so, and in that, it just, yeah, we enjoy history and we can go around talking about history with people. And my mother has also, she does a presentation on one of her ancestors. And so my daughters started tagging along and I too, and they would help contribute to the presentation. So it just, it made it a family event, starting with my great-grandfather who told the story, you know, years ago. It sparked that interest. And then my dad inherited that ability to tell stories. And then with my mom's curiosity for her ancestry, then it just, it opened up opportunities for us with DAR and DRT. And I want to say this too, you can also be a member of DAR and DRT, even if you're not, if you can't prove lineage, you can't hold an office, but you can participate and be a part of it. And we have several members, I know for sure with DRT that do. So
I didn't know that. That's interesting. Yeah. So are your daughters involved? Is there a way for the kids to do things as well with those organizations?
There are. So there with DAR, there's Children of the American Revolution, and both my daughters are members of that. We've been less active in that. We're new to that chapter. So I know less about that. But what they've really been active in is Children of the Republic of Texas. And because it's a national organization, they've been officers on that level. And so my older daughter is no longer an officer, but Parker, my younger daughter, is a second vice president for CRT.
So very neat. Good. Well, do you have some thoughts for us? I mean, I know a lot of people listening might think, well, that's great, but I can't trace my family's history back, or I live in the middle of a suburb and, you know, there's zero connection to this property. What hope is there for us?
No, there absolutely is. Because I think about my grandfather, the raconteur that told the stories. I never saw the places he told. I never told about. I never lived on that property, but he told the story. And so if a place to start might be, if you know of a family member who has been in DAR or DRT, any kind of lineage society, if they'd be a great aunt or someone you don't know well, but call them. You know, it opens a door to what stories there are that you may not know. And then if you can prove, you know, connection to that person with birth certificates and all of that, then you could possibly be a member of DAR and didn't even know it. I think a lot of people could be in DAR or CAR and they just don't know. You know, and thinking back, if you can't go back farther than that, just tell stories about your childhood. And I know all childhood stories aren't happy. All family stories aren't happy. There's stuff we've found out through this that I really would have been okay not knowing. But there's something about knowing where you came from or what happened before you. And if there's no way to find out what happened before you, start telling what you did experience. Pass that on to your children because they do want to hear. They want to know what it was like when you didn't have a cell phone, you know, and I think grandparents play a huge role in that because I know for my girls that it started with the grandparents. I love history because there was no way to get around it. My dad talked about history all the time, and it wasn't just family history. It was Texas history. It was, you know, stuff that I didn't necessarily have a personal connection to, but he made it a part of our family culture.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would suggest.
I know one thing, my little grandson was working on a project and I thought this would be something any homeschooler could do. was just to take a map and interview his grandparents. So that was, you know, Steve and I on one side, then of course his mom's parents, and to start coloring places in the map where people had come from, where his ancestors had come from. And I think that really helped open his eyes to seeing, you know, some really neat, and kind of that's the start and the little gateway into those stories. Because of course, when he asked Steve and I, we couldn't help but tell some of the stories that we knew and, you know, learn some more along the way. So, just a simple geography lesson of let's look on a piece, let's start coloring the places, you know, that we came from.
Which, Renee, that sounds exciting to me, because most of mine would be Texas, and you know, for a young child. So the fact that y'all have other places to add to that, that's neat.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
Before my dad died, and he died in 1999 at the age of 70, he wrote down and just typed them up. My mom put them in a binder, and they're just a whole binder full of his favorite stories that he remembered, either his own experiences or ones he'd been told. And so this just reminds me, I have that binder upstairs, and I really should make copies and give it to all my kids at this point.
You know? Absolutely. What a gift that will continue to give.
Yeah. They weren't as colorful as Comanche, you know. That was going on, but it was all in Canada and England, you know. Yeah.
But that's how you find out those colorful things or those heartwarming. You just have to start talking, right? Just start getting it out there. One time around the dinner table, we had the most fascinating conversation about, and y'all know I love to cook. So I think I just started asking my mom and dad, what did you eat for dinner when you were little? What do you remember? You know, where did the food come from? Who cooked it? But literally, like, what were your favorite meals, or what was a normal meal for you? And that just got them both talking and both opened up about really interesting, you know, not, you know, earth-shatteringly, you know, crazy things, but just, you know, when you live on a farm, this is what you eat. And of course, then you can't help but notice how different it is than the way we do things today. Like, you know, how common it was to eat the same thing over and over, because that's what you have, right? But even just questions like, and what was your favorite food? Or what did you not like to eat? Or what did you have to eat? And you had no choice about, you know, so.
I love that, because everyone can relate to that. Yeah. Anyone who eats. My grandmother on my mom's side, because she grew up just down the road too, and we didn't know as much about her family, we would ask those questions, and my mom was great about leading that. And we found out that my grandmother made fudge as a little girl because her uncles loved the fudge that she made. And so then we got together, and Emery and Parker in the kitchen with their great grandmother making fudge. Now, it didn't turn out, because she had, you know, forgotten the recipe and time had passed, but it was just that experience was, I'll cherish it. So.
Mm-hmm. And times have changed so much. You know, both my grandmothers were born around 1900. One was born in 1900. And so when you consider the 123 years since then and the major, major changes in our culture, like, the time, like, it just seems like progress, if you want to call it that, sped up so, so fast compared to all the years before that. And so, you know, if kids even hear about their grandparents' experiences living through World War II, or what life was like in the 50s, it's so vastly different from today. And, mm-hmm. you know, to me, it doesn't seem like all that long ago, but it's just so different from what children are experiencing now. Anything makes such a great story.
I think you're exactly right. We take for granted that, you know, our story isn't exciting. Well, it's not exciting to us because we know it so well, but the ones, you know, the generations later that didn't know it, it could be fascinating to them. Mm-hmm. And then tie us to the past. And in that, we find traditions that either we forgot or that can be linked to something we're doing now. Oh, we might be doing that because of this past, you know, thing that our family did. And so it's just neat to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love you know, learning the story, not only our family stories, but of course I love books. And so to find out about, you know, local authors or who are the people who are from this place telling the stories of these people and hunting them down. And that can take you on a fun little rabbit trail journey of, you know, as an adult, if you're interested in the history of a place, to find those books and those authors. You can end up in used bookstores and library book sales where you're looking for those older books. But it's a fascinating way to start learning from older voices, I guess you would say. But and then, you know, to try to get our kids maybe interested in some of those books as well, like to find who are the writers who are appealing to their age, who are telling, you know, these stories. So
that's exactly right. And we had a neat encounter. It's been a couple of years ago, but I found a book, The Boy in the Alamo, and I can't recall the author right now, but I was telling my dad about it and that the girls and I were reading it together. And he said, oh yeah, I read that. And he named the character in the book. Well, he had read it when he was a little boy. And so it, just the fact that we found stories that my dad had experienced, and then it's something that a grandfather and grandchildren can talk about and appreciate Texas history together. Oh, the other thing. And so grandmothers, this is what my parents did. They took the girls on a Texas history trip just for a few days. They traveled to different historic sites in Texas. And so it sparked that it was information not coming from mom.
Yeah.
And it just sparked that that curiosity and excitement for history for them. So the girls still talk about it.
That's a great idea. Oh, I love that. Yeah. Take, you know, a trip with grandma and grandpa and to learn at the same time. Like you said, not from mom.
Yes.
Investment shows the children that this isn't just a fact that's disconnected from them, that they have to learn or they have to memorize or whatever, because it's part of a curriculum. It's part of who they are.
Yeah.
Right? And it just would fill your imagination to go to these places and think, oh, my ancestors were here.
Yeah.
Yes. And they might have seen these same things. They might have been in the same place.
That's exactly right. The one that stands out the most to me, I think because I haven't been there and the girls got to go, so I think it's great, but at Goliad, where the men were massacred brutally. And so they stood in that place and there was that moment of men sacrificed for me to be in Texas right now. And this is part of that story. And even though we don't have a family connection to Goliad, it's part of our history. So, because it's why we are where we are now, it led to this.
Well, and I was thinking when we were in, when Steve and I got a chance to visit Scotland a couple of years ago and going to these small little towns and villages, there was always a war memorial in the central town square area. And I'm thinking, what would it be like to grow up always seeing and always being reminded that, like you said, people came before and they fought for what was right, or they represented our people and our place here, and some of them didn't come back. But you're always reminded with that physical thing in front of you of you know, who you are and what you've come from. And I think it's, you know, in the Bible, God tells his people to set up stones and to make physical reminders and things. So you know, I would encourage these young moms listening to find what are those physical things that you can keep and point to, even if it's like a quilt that someone made in your family, or maybe it is a medal that was worn by someone who was in the armed forces that, you know, came before you. And I think we need to show our kids and our grandkids too these physical reminders of who they are.
Absolutely. And I don't know if other states do this. I know Texas has historical markers along the highway. And so, and you, as a kid, we stopped and looked at the historical marker. You know, we sat in the car, everybody read, you know, someone read the historical marker. We all listened. And so we talked about it. Well, now you can get an app on your phone and it tells you what the historical marker says. So you keep driving, but you can read what, and there's still, of course, it's a lovely thing to stop too, but if you're in a hurry, So the girls and I have that on our phones where, you know, if we pass one, oh, well, what is this one? And so we could look it up and then say, oh, well, this happened.
What is this app called? How do people find it?
It is called Texas Historical Marker Guide.
So do other states have that too? Do you think?
No. I bet they do.
I hope so. Yeah, there are so many historical markers around here, like even in our town in Concord, North Carolina. And have I stopped and read them all? No, I'm always in a hurry to get to my next place and, you know, need to just do that.
Yeah, it's interesting. And sometimes it's just a silly little quick, oh, there was a church here in, you know, 1920, which is, you know, interesting. And then sometimes you stop and it was just this impactful moment in history that you didn't know happened in that place.
Yeah.
We need to slow down. That's a good reminder.
Yeah, I feel like we have become very poor rememberers in our culture. I was shocked this week, sort of, when I saw so little on the news or on social media about 9/11. I thought, have we, you know, just a couple people posted things and I didn't really see very much at all. I mean, I didn't look much, but on the major news, you know, on my phone about it. And I thought, oh, we're not forgetting, are we?
No. And, you know, that's a really good point because that's something I would think most mothers and fathers, they remember what they were doing at that moment. So then there's a conversation to have. Yeah. This is where I was, you know, this is what I saw and how much it shook the country.
Yeah.
This is wonderful. Before you finish, Karen, I'm going to share a quote real quick. And I love that it kind of connects with what Marcia's talking about and just the community and family and those connections that we want to maintain and to reinforce. And Karen, this is a quote from Wendell Berry. This is one of our favorite characters, right? Burley Coulter.
Oh, cool.
And Burley is the one that on our official dwell coffee cup, Burley is the one who said all women are brothers. But this comes from the short story called That Distant Land, the collected stories of Port William. And Burley is having a conversation with Wheeler Catlett. And he says, the way we are members of each other, all of us, everything. The difference ain't in who is a member and who is not, but in who knows it and who don't.
Mm.
I just love that.
Right.
Our members.
We want our children to know that they're members, that this is bigger than just, you know, the people that live in the.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
House right now.
Right.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. So thanks for that quote. I love that. And all of this conversation had me thinking about Wendell Berry and his attention that he plays to the land and the place and the people and how important it is. And how sometimes when we live in a suburb, it doesn't feel like that. And yet we still have community and we're still connected down mm-hmm. through time and across space. And it's just a gift that God's given us. And so thank you, Marcia.
No, thank you.
I'm inspired to find out more, to write things down, or, you know, just to dig a little deeper. So thank you. And
absolutely.
Here's to home.